So I'm actually recording this the day after Friday the 13th, and I'm still alive, and nothing bad happened to me. In fact, lots of good things happened to me yesterday. So I'm starting to think maybe this whole Friday the 13th is unlucky thing as like a scam. But anyway, I'm still alive, you're still alive, I'm assuming, unless of course you're listening to this in some kind of like nether realm, or, you know, does the afterlife have podcasts available? I don't know. But nevertheless, I'm recording it and you're hearing it, so let's get started. Our love's flag is a confused concoction. So many stripes, breaking colours, as they run across a background of stolen stars. We fly it from my palace as you crawl to my chamber, clinging to my diamonds and my dresses, muttering the red flag to yourself as you sink your head between my legs, hoping you'll find a path to my hard to reach heart. You spent the sunlight marching through the streets, chanting for my head to be fed to the people, catching yourself off guard as you remarked that I would be the most delicious dish they had ever tasted. I'm so wasted on you. As night falls, your might falls away, as you pray to a god you despise, failing to pry yourself from my skin. You sing the red flag with tears in your eyes, as I cringe before a rich man's heartbreak. A rich man who cannot confess his own reality, weaving a new way for himself to live, speaking of stolen times that were never his, like the stolen stars that escaped our hearts, falling onto our flag, waving over our fucked up fictional kingdom. Is it real to you? The lengths you must go to love me the way that you do, even when I'm so cruel to you. Lost in your lust, you sneak and you stalk under the shade, singing your deceitful devotion in secret, wearing a lie weaved from what the people around you want to hear. And during the day, you parade, saying that you will bring my jewels to the streets and let people feast on my corpse. But underneath, there is a cavern in your chest, a gaping hole where your heart would rest, a heart that still beats, alone on my desk, watching you beg every night for me to keep it forever. So, as I mentioned, I feel like maybe I said about this last episode, maybe. I'm working on a project that has a lot to do with reflection and like looking back through my life at things and writing about them. And one of the people that I'm writing about, sometimes it was like he was two people, because there was the reality of him as a person, and then there was the reality of him that he wanted for other people to see, and I think maybe he wanted himself to see that too. I think a lot of people do that, you know, you have yourself as you define yourself in your mind, and who you want other people to see you as, who you aspire to be almost, but then there's just the you underneath it, the, you know, the one that is you without all of the things that you do to present yourself in a certain way. And I don't think that there's anything really wrong with that. But I've always found it very interesting that there are certain things that kind of unveil sort of the truth, as it were. And one of the things tends to be relationships that they have with other people. So I wanted to kind of write about how you know, who he was, just on a base level, and who I was, would probably be fine. But who he wanted to be and who he wanted other people to see him as, and the person that he aspired to be, it didn't work, because it, you know, it just wasn't compatible. It didn't make sense. It didn't match up. But it was like he would overlook it. You know what I mean? I was kind of the opposite of what he wanted, or what he said he wanted. I don't know. And yet, time and time again, he would come back. And I've always found that very interesting. How, in a sense, your emotions can sometimes unveil, you know, what you're willing to accept in terms of differences. And it's like, I guess love makes hypocrites of us all. I don't know. I think sometimes you're willing to just overlook things about people. You know, I'm saying this, I'm, you know, by no means a terrible person, but, you know, it's just more, we were very opposites and we saw the world very differently. And, but as I got to know him better, I realized actually we were very similar and we did see things in a similar way. It's just the way that he wanted the public to perceive him, and the people and the people he knew and his friends and everything like that very much depended on him reflecting a different reality to who he is out into the world. And I always found that very interesting about him, among other things, obviously. But I wanted to kind of write about that, so I decided to sort of dress it up and have fun with it, and, you know, take these different images and play with them and really kind of explore sort of this whole sort of mini universe I created for myself, and I suppose by definition for him. Scratch your fever into the forest, parted from the heart she longed for, settling for cold concrete, soft but somber surroundings. The forest, now a pessimistic plank, will always understand. She will know the truth, that he was cute from the moment you met him. She will know that you still loved him, even when his face was a distant, nervous memory. A tapestry of all the things you feared but fantasized about most. She will listen if you let her. Scratch your fever into the forest. Bring your love. Bring your joy. Let her share your secret, wearing your hidden heartbreak with pride. Decorated in the desires you wept over. Let her be the bank you swim to when you are done drowning in his last words to you. Scratch your fever into the forest, and she will tell you that you were never sick in the first place. Okay, so this next section of the podcast will contain spoilers for the movie It, Chapter 2. It came out, I think, last Friday? Yeah. But I know that not everybody who wants to may have had a chance to see it yet, so I'm gonna put timestamps in the description, but I'm also letting you know now that there are spoilers coming, like in the next sort of 30 seconds. It will approximately last for about 5 minutes, but as I'm literally recording this now, I honestly can't give you like a concrete answer on that. But I will have in the description timestamps, so if you don't want to hear spoilers, you can just check those and say, okay, from here to here, I can't listen yet. So the spoilers are gonna start now. So, I went to see It Chapter 2. I saw Chapter 1. I loved it. I've read the book before. I loved it. I watched the miniseries, you know, the old one. I loved that too. I went to see it, I think, the day after it came out. I had like this nervous energy because I'm going to tell you guys a secret. Yes, I will watch pretty much any horror movie put in front of me. Yes, I have probably watched some of the most depraved and fucked up things imaginable. But I really don't like spiders, like a lot. And I know, spider Pennywise, right? And so I was apprehensive. You should see me every time I go and see Chapter 1, because I went to see it. They put it, like, it was back in cinemas a couple of weeks ago, and I went to see it. Girl, you know that scene. I was sat there with my eyes covered up, because I knew when it was going to happen, and I was like, no, oh my God. But, you know, I made it through. This time, actually, when I saw Chapter 2, I did not cover my eyes for 1 second, and I was very proud of myself. I thought that was a big achievement. And do you know what gave me the power to do that? Reddy, or Rich and Eddie, as I believe the kids, you know, they refer to it as Reddy, you know what I mean. So if you don't know what I mean, obviously I'm assuming you've seen the film if you have gone through the lovely and very informative spoiler warning that I just did, and you're still listening, so I'm assuming you've seen it. But if you just weren't paying attention, or you're one of those people who's like, oh, that's nice, two boys being friends, just boys being pals, you know. So Richie's gay. That's Richie's big secret, and he's in love with Eddie. That gave me so much happiness, because, you know, I felt this joy and this happiness, because there it was on the big screen, and beautiful and happy. And, you know, well, obviously happy until the end, but then it gets happy again. So I know that some people have their problems with it. There's been a lot of think pieces about how the representation could have been better, and there should have been a big scene where Richie suddenly declares, by the way, I'm gay. As an LGBT person myself, I'm going to be real with you. He probably wasn't there yet. He only just managed to go back and scratch the rest of his little love declaration for Eddie on the bridge. I don't know if Miss Thing was ready for, you know, the big rainbow party. And that's fine. It's, because here's the thing. I get it. People become frustrated because of LGBT representation being so minimal. And so they want everything to be huge. But realistically, there are going to be stories where LGBT people don't feel ready to go the whole way. And I think those stories still deserve to be told too. I mean, realistically, if we're talking about the Richie from this series of movies, this is a kid who grew up in the 80s. The one time someone even suspected he was gay, he was literally bullied and run out of an arcade. And then immediately after, a fucked up, you know, monster that plays on all his worst fears basically threatens to out him and then sets a massive fucking statue on him. It's very possible that, you know, he's just not there yet. He's only just accepting it to himself. So I don't actually think it's that unrealistic that he wouldn't be at that point where he can say publicly to his friends that, let's not forget, he's only just really reunited with and remembered. oh, by the way, everyone, I'm gay and I was in love with Eddie the whole time, you know? It's quite possible that they figured it out, you know, because there was the big cuddle scene in the river. But, I mean, he might not be able to say it. And realistically, there are lots of LGBT people that happens to, you know. Sometimes it takes you longer and longer and much longer than anyone realistically thinks is possible. But, you know, I still think it's good representation. I think that it's important, and I think that it's a wonderful thing, and it made me very happy seeing it, and so I wrote about it. It's like, you know, fan fiction, but for people with low attention spans like me. So it's like, oh, I just wrote a poem about it. But it's something that was kind of alluded to in the novel. I don't really remember much of the miniseries because I haven't watched it in a long time. I cannot recall if it was really hinted at there. But it was very cool to see, you know, this whole thing come to life, and this love story kind of unfolding, and not just the love story aspect, but Richie accepting himself and accepting who he is was very, very moving and very beautiful. And, you know, that's for me something that I've always loved about horror films. I think that they often have very beautiful stories like that. They have, you know, these intense, moving moments for characters, because, to be quite frank with you, a lot of people in horror films think that they're about to die, so they really, you know, they have these life-changing moments, and it was very special to be able to see that. So I have now seen that film twice. I'll probably see it again before it leaves cinemas. I will probably pre-order it on... Well, actually, I don't buy DVDs anymore. Do you know what I do? I buy them on, like, iTunes and Amazon and that, because I know it's not the same having, like, a digital file, but, like, you know what I mean? I mean, it is for me, because I stream everything. I cannot tell you the last time I've sat down and actually put on a DVD. But anyway, I very much love the film. If you haven't seen it and you just decided to wade through my spoilery hell, then I recommend you see it. But if you have seen it, go see it again. Why not? So yeah, I wrote that about that situation, about, you know, kind of, when you're young and you don't really understand why you feel the way you do, and you're confused and you're scared and you don't know what's going on and what's going to happen to you and what it all means. A lot of the time you don't have anyone to talk to. And I mean, that scene was one of my favorites in the film, right at the end where Richie goes back to the bridge and he finishes off the message he was writing in. I just thought it was incredibly beautiful, and so that was kind of what I got a lot of inspiration for that from. Oh, and one last spoilery bit. Not to be that bitch who's like, read the book before you go see the film. I don't want to be that elitist bitch, but can we just have a moment of silence for all the people who saw It Chapter One and decided that Pennywise was a gay icon and started shipping him with the Babadook, who are now very disappointed. Let's just pour one out for those poor souls. I have to confess something. I'm not really sure why Pennywise became an LGBT icon. Like, I still don't really understand how that happened. I don't really understand why the Babadook did either. I guess maybe it was the hat, I don't know. I'm actually going to look it up right now because I'm still really confused. I mean, I enjoyed the memes, I will not lie. But I'm not really sure why that happened. Okay, I found an article from Pink News. Okay, they say, an unlikely character has joined the Babadook in becoming 2017's strangest gay icon, Pennywise, right? Now, tell me why. Okay, it's literally because somebody posted a tweet saying that Pennywise said gay rights. Well, I mean, if this is the standards that we're working with, then, I mean, and what's funny is that a load of people replied basically warning these people, hey guys, Pennywise hates the gays. And I mean, it turned out that these people were right. So I think maybe it started as a joke, but then some people took it seriously and got upset. And I mean, wow. But if we are looking for an LGBT icon from the Stephen King universe, may I humbly suggest Annie from Misery. I know what you're thinking, girl, what are you talking about? Well, I'll tell you what I'm talking about. Annie is basically a representation of Stan Twitter, most of which is LGBT people. So, I mean, she gets us. You know, she can relate. So, Stan Annie. Pennywise is cancelled, but Stan Annie, the real LGBT icon. Are you looking for a platform where you can have your voice heard? Find your home and find your voice on Rumble, the brand new video platform where you can share your thoughts, express your passions, and find like-minded people and creators. Download Rumble from the App Store or visit rumble.me to find out more. There is no good time to remember this nightmare. Honeyed words kill bees. You got all dressed up, you fashioned forgiveness, but your skeleton looms. There is no good time to run from your own horror. People died, Amber. So for today's luxury hot take, we're going to be talking about Amber Rudd. If you don't know who that is, she, up until last weekend, was a member of Boris Johnson's government. And then she resigned from the government because Boris was being mean to her friends. And she finally realised that one of the most notorious liars ever was in fact a notorious liar. And you know what, with all the chaos that's been going on, I wouldn't have even thought about it. But somebody on my Twitter timeline decided to share with us all the horror of Amber Rudd's attempt at poetry. And girl, that got me thinking about stuff. So here's the background on that. So I don't know, I think it was before she was an MP, she entered this poetry competition and they had to write about contraception or something. And she wrote this really cringy poem about, you know, trying to basically encourage people to use contraception or whatever. You know, it was very, your auntie writes a rap about why knife crime is bad, you know what I mean? But it was really cringe. And so I just kind of, with that and the whole resignation thing, I just wrote something, you know, because I am your cringy aunt here to tell you that, you know, being a horrific person and then doing one good thing doesn't make up for all the bad things you did. I don't know if that's as valuable a lesson as knife crime is bad or, you know, use contraception, but I'm here to give it anyway. So there are a lot of people celebrating that she resigned, but not in a, oh, thank God, this person who was terrible at her job has finally fucking resigned way. They're celebrating in a, oh, she's a hero, wow, kind of way. And I'm like, girl, really? Really? Huh? Huh? Okay, I guess the bar is like not only on the floor, it's descended through the floor down to hell. And then the devil is like, what's this bar doing here? And he sent it like even further down. Like, I don't know what's underneath hell, but that bar is there now, is what I'm saying. So this is a woman who bears some of the responsibility for the Windrush scandal, which literally resulted in people who had every right to live and work in the UK being deported to countries that they hadn't even been to since they were children, by themselves, all alone, being deported. And we're just supposed to forget that happened now because she gave an interview and she was kind of mean about Boris Johnson. You know, this is a woman who, week after week, when she was confronted with the fact that her department, because here's the thing, she had to resign from the Home Office because she was fucking atrocious at her job. And then just months later, she's given another big job. She's sent to the Department for Work and Pensions because, I don't know, I guess fucking up looks really good on your CV, according to our government. I have no idea. Anyway, so she ended up back at the Department for Work and Pensions, and she would sit there every single week as MPs came to her and said, look, my constituents are having to sell all their possessions just so they can get food because your government isn't making the payments to them properly. There are huge delays in payments to people who need this money. They're vulnerable. They need support. Will you please do something? There are, you know, people that we've worked with who've had to go to food banks. There are people who have been thrown out of their homes because your government hasn't done their job properly. And she would sit there with an attitude and get all, she would be like mouthing off back at them across the chamber and shit. And it's like, girl, firstly, have some decorum. Okay. I'd like to remind you, and actually I'd like to remind all of these people, we can see you. BBC Parliament is like on all the time. We can see you. You're being filmed. Stop this nonsense. But she would sit there, right? Arms folded. Like, it was a mess. It was embarrassing. And people would be saying to her, you know, people are in poverty because of things that your department have done, because your department has stopped paying them incorrectly, or your department doesn't believe that somebody who has terminal cancer and can't walk is ill enough to receive the help that they need. You know, stuff like that. And she'd just sit there and be like, no, no, it's fine. Nothing is wrong. And we're just supposed to forget that because she resigned from Boris's government after, you know, several years of this nonsense. And I mean, the only reason she did resign is because she was like, oh, you know, him throwing out 21 of my colleagues was really bad. And it's like, well, people have died because of your department and the complete mess you made of running it. But I mean, sure, yeah, a couple of Tories being kicked out of the party, that's where you draw the line? Girl, I mean, sis, I just wish that she could get some perspective and get real about the world. And I wish that she had had more backbone when she had the chance. Because when Theresa May fucked off to the backbenches, you know, and the confines of meme history, and Boris Johnson ascended from hell to take his place on the throne of lies, she had every opportunity to say, you know what, I'm not going to do this anymore. Because, I mean, it's not like he had any grand plans for the Department for Work and Pensions to make it actually function in a way that doesn't target poor and vulnerable people. So she had every chance, if she was a decent person, to take her out then, really. Or at any point, you know, but she didn't. The thing that was a step too far for her was some of her colleagues being kicked out of the party because Boris was throwing a tantrum. Like, really, that's it? That was the thing that made you snap? Okay. And then she was all, you know, I wanted to get a deal on Brexit, and it became clear to me after a while that he was not interested in that. And I was like, girl, what are you talking about? It's been very obvious to, like, the general public for quite some time that he has no intention of doing that. And we're not invited to cabinet meetings. I don't get to go to cabinet. Maybe I should, because, I mean, I can't do a worse job than any of them. But, you know, we don't have the insight that she does. And we all knew that he wasn't trying to get a deal, and he wasn't playing fair, and he wasn't doing things in the national interest. So how did she not know? She was right there. And I'm supposed to feel sorry for this girl because she's finally come to her senses and she's left? No. I'm supposed to see her as some kind of hero, some kind of maverick? No. She is escaping the ship while it's sinking. She is that girl. She's on the door. She's floating away. She's like, oh, you know, I'm leaving. Bye. Like, by the way, I actually haven't seen Titanic. I just know that it involves a door and someone floating away. So I don't even know if I used that correctly. But my point is, she's not doing this because she's a principled person. She's doing it because she can see that the government is falling apart and she doesn't want to be blamed. She wants to try and hold on to her seat. She wants to hold on to her paycheck, which is, I believe it's somewhere around the region of like $75,000 a year, plus expenses, obviously. She wants to hold on to this lifestyle that she has. She's not doing this because she suddenly realized the truth, because the truth has been obvious to all of us for quite some time. She's doing this because she wants to get away from the label of being part of Boris's government. Because when this all goes to shit, and it will all go to shit, she knows that her constituents, her voters, are going to blame the government. And if she is not in that government anymore, she can say, well, you know, I tried to stop it, but I couldn't, vote for me anyway. All she cares about is keeping hold of her seat. She doesn't actually care about any of the things she claims to care about. And I just... she's not a hero. She's an opportunist, you know? And not even really a very good one, because she hasn't exactly made it. If she was trying to position herself as some kind of, you know, sort of hero taking on the big bad government and turning her back on them and returning to the people, she could at least make it a bit more convincing. But I mean... well, she wasn't very good at writing poetry, so maybe she's not a very good actress either. When you are surrounded by corpses, stacking up souls like a hoarder of hearts, it could be time to consider that perhaps the problem is you. I'm not sure that's something I'm actually prepared to do, because to be fair, insert list of reasons here. And so you'll see, and obviously you'll agree, that I am merely unlucky in love and in every other respect, so nobody can really expect me to concede that the problem is in fact me. That's another one from the reflective little thing that I'm working on at the moment. I've often thought about whether the problem is me. And you know what? I have a theory. Yes, but in different ways. Okay? So in some ways, it's my fault because I allow some people to treat me badly and to do things that are not acceptable in the context of a romantic adventure. In some cases, it is my fault because I push other people away and I am very distant because of my previous experiences. In some cases, though, it's just not one of those things that's ever going to work. So I don't think it's anyone's fault. And throughout my life, I've learned a lot, and I'm making a conscious effort to not allow for any more experiences where I allow somebody to treat me in a way that I find unacceptable. And also, I am working on not allowing myself to pull away from positive situations because I'm afraid of it going the other way. You know what I mean? So I suppose, yes, the problem is me, but for different reasons each time, because I am a formidable and terrifying opponent to my life and my happiness. And I can be self-destructive in a million different ways. Just watch me. But I'm working on it. So that's good. And also I've written a fucking book about it. So that's also good. Get the new album, Sleepwalking, by Jennifer Wong. Available now on iTunes, Spotify, and all major streaming services and digital stores. Find the deluxe edition exclusively on Bandcamp and jenniferwong.com, featuring the new single, Calais and Dover. Okay, that's all for this week's episode, but I will see you next week. Until then, you can find more of my work on my website, which is jenniferwong.com. You can also find me on social media with the username Miss J Squared on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Rumble, SoundCloud. Is that considered like a social media thing? I mean, I post stuff on there sometimes. I don't know. Anyway, I'm in lots of different places, usually with that username, is my point. So you can find me and find more of my work. You can find lots of stuff on my website, as I said, jenniferwong.com. There is lots of cool projects on there, videos, audio projects, lots more episodes of this podcast, and lots of written projects that you can read. There's lots of free content on my website. For those who maybe are looking to, I suppose in a sense, be my sugar daddy and like spend money on me. you can buy my books. The details for that are in the description. You can buy music that I've done and things like that. Or If you would like to, you can support this podcast and other free to access content that I make on Patreon. The details of that are down below as well. Patreon subscribers get free content, free merchandise, exclusive stuff that nobody else gets. They also get lots of early content. So if you are interested in that, you can check that out. And there is also one-off donations available through PayPal and Ko-fi. And donators to that get access to the early release program on my website so they can see lots of stuff early. A special thank you to my friends over on Patreon, Amanda, Kylie, Melissa, Anna, Sam, Katie, Christina, Josie, Gabriella, David, and Eleanor. You guys are the coolest and I love you very much. And also Patreon guys, friends, ladies, gents, bunny rabbits, everybody. You should have got your signed books by now, I think, if the postal system works the way I think it does. So you should have got those by now. If not, it should be in the next few days. Until next week, it is time for us to part, but I will be back. I will see you next week. Good night, my love.